Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And we both welcome you back to The New World Next Week, which, of course, you can find everything you need at NewWorldNextWeek.com. And this show can also now be seen on the brand new NextNewsNetwork.com, thanks to Gary Franchi and company. And we've also not mentioned in a while that you can also see this show thanks to ParadigmShift.tv. Those are just some of the ways that we're trying to spread the word out about New World Next Week. And again, a huge thanks to everybody who shares these and downloads and comments and tweets and status and all those things out in the social network world. James, we'll begin widescreen and kind of drill in more specifically as we go on this episode. And we'll begin with the new World Economic Forum's report saying financial and climate crises raising global risks. With economic strains on one side and ever more environmental concerns on the other, the world could soon find itself in the perfect global storm, the World Economic Forum warned in a new report published yesterday, Tuesday, January 8th, here in the States. The world is more at risk as persistent economic weakness saps our ability to tackle environmental challenges, warned the WEF, which each year hosts a massive get-together of decision makers and activists at the Swiss mountain resort in Davos. In its Global Risks 2013, and of course you can use hashtag Risks2013 to follow this story on Twitter. In its Global Risk 2013 report, based on a survey of more than 1,000 experts from industry, government, academia, and civil society, the WEF pointed out that crises and austerity measures were severely testing the global economic system. At the same time, it stressed the world faced rising global temperatures and more extreme weather, like catastrophic flooding in China and Hurricane Sandy, which slammed the east coast of the United States late October. The acute social and economic difficulties are making the world more reluctant to address more long-term threats like climate change, while natural disasters wreak serious havoc on many economies. Two storms, environmental and economic, are on a collision course, warned one expert, John Drzik, head of the Oliver Wyman Group. The experts, who were asked to rate 50 global risks, suggested the risk of growing wealth gaps was the most likely to materialize, followed by unsustainable government debt and rising greenhouse gas emissions. They deemed, however, that major systemic financial failure would have the biggest impact if it happened, followed by a major water supply crisis and chronic fiscal imbalances. Jumping down to the very bottom, the risks highlighted in the report will be the focus of a special session at the World Economic Forum's annual meeting in Davos at the end of this January. James will also include supplemental links to the weforum.org so you can actually read the report and see all their multimedia bells and whistles.
And I hope people will take a look at this, because this is just a perfect example of how crises can always be used to usher in new paradigms, new ways of thinking, and new forms of governmental control. Because any guesses on what the World Economic Forum is going to suggest as the solutions to these types of crises? I'm betting it's not getting off the grid and becoming independent and taking your financial and economic future into your own hands. I bet you it's becoming somehow more enmeshed in the globalist system. And this is just a perfect example of this. Here they are combining the economic catastrophes with the climate change, the man-made global warming myth, into one nice little package that they can use to hopefully try to control and steer global politics. And also in this, I suggest people read a little bit down in the article. It says, in addition to the economic and environmental risks, the WEF report also identified so-called digital wildfires as a top risk category. While in many ways a force for good, the democratization of information can also have volatile and unpredictable consequences, it cautioned. Well, you better watch out for people spreading information on the internet. Ooh. So again, this just is a perfect example of everything they like to roll into one big fear-mongering package, and there it is. And I guess we get to choose whether or not we'll swallow this particular excrement sandwich. For myself, I'm not going to, and I suggest people out there don't either, but by all means, go and take a look at this yourself and come to your own conclusions about what the World Economic Forum is really up to.
And I have to thank the fine folks at the Council on Foreign Relations for alerting me to the release of this report a few days ago. As I try and do on my Twitter account at Media Monarchy, is I've got a hashtag listening to the enemy where I do tweet out some of the Council on Foreign Relations reports. So you can see what they're talking about, because that's a lot of times going to be what the mainstream media will begin to talk about as it kind of trickles downhill, so to speak. James, our second story will center in here on the USSA as Obama's picks for defense and the CIA signal a new security era. And this comes from the Washington Post via the Seattle Times. President Obama is assembling a national security team designed for an era of downsized but enduring conflict, a team that will be asked to preside over the return of exhausted American troops and wield power through the targeted use of sanctions, special operations forces, and drone strikes. Obama's nominations of former Senator Chuck Hagel as Defense Secretary and White House counterterrorism advisor John Brennan to lead the CIA signal second-term course adjustments at institutions that have been dominated by their lethal assignments during more than a decade of war. Those adjustments could include returning the CIA's focus to its core mission of gathering intelligence, even though it's expected to maintain its fleet of armed drones for years. The Pentagon faces an even more aggressive restructuring to balance budget cuts against threats, including China's ascendant military and emerging al-Qaeda affiliates in North Africa and the Middle East. The nominations also set the stage for confirmation fights driven not only by criticism of Hagel and Brennan, but by the foreign policy approach they represent. I have one related note, James, via allgov.com. CIA nominee Brennan's resume highlights include Obama's kill list and the Bush torture program. And what are your highlights?
Well, first we should frame this in the way that the narrative is being framed right now in the mainstream. So Brennan's torture past is coming back to haunt him to a certain extent with this, and that's getting a lot of highlighting. And with Hagel, a lot of people are pointing out, oh, he's a decorated war vet, so he's one of the few defense secretaries in the last 30 years who has actually been in war, so that will make him less hawkish and more prone to thinking before rushing into some sort of war action. And he's made comments in the past about not wanting to rush into war with Iran, etc. So he's going to be the break on the Obama administration. This is the narrative they're coming up with, but Hagel is a Bilderberg trilateralist, so I'll believe it when I see it, if he actually goes against the system and tries to put the brakes on the next globalist intervention. And Brennan, of course, he was involved in torture. He was involved in the drone programs, the kill list, the assassinations. And as people might remember back when I was covering the Petraeus affair, and I predicted that Brennan would probably be the next nominee for CIA chief, I was pointing out that Brennan also has links to the company that was implicated in the breaking into the records of the passport records of Obama and Clinton and McCain back in the 2008 election, but specifically Obama. And he was the CEO of the company that was implicated in that scandal at that time. So once again, I hope people will go back to my coverage of that, the Petraeus affair from Brennan to Benghazi. I hope people will go back and take a look at that information, because Brennan is quite a character. And to have him as head of CIA, I think, is going to start a disturbing new era of even further militarization and further atrocities committed by the CIA as it starts to become quite openly just an arm of the New World Order global government push.
I don't think I knew that about Brennan and his connection to the Obama passport. We did a lot of work at Ground Zero Media during Petraeus Gate, and we sort of looked at it through the lens of what if this was a sort of 7 days in May type scenario. For folks, check out the film 7 days in May. About a military coup, we sort of speculated, wonder if the Petraeus-Obama situation, that only kind of gives more credence that perhaps, I'm speculating here, someone like Brennan has way more dirt on someone like Obama than comes out, and people get compromised. And it's like, hey, I want that sweet gig at the CIA, and you're going to give it to me.
James? Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And so once again, I hope people take a look at that information.
Let me spring one other thing on you here, James, as long as we're talking about all these new second-term assignments here. I find it really interesting that it's probably going to be John Kerry as the new Secretary of State. That seems to all signs point to him. So, Susan Rice is out. someone like John Kerry is, I need to go do a little bit more homework on this, but he's essentially through his life seems to be someone who is brought out to sort of control the limited hangout on stories. In the Vietnam era, you know, he could testify to Congress about, you know, the My Lai massacre as if that was the only time that something like that happened in Vietnam. Then he was brought out, I think, during Iran-Contra, and then he ran against his fraternity buddy in 2004 to control the outrage against George Bush, and now he's going to be brought in yet again as, again, you know, the John Fixer Forbes Kerry to take care of our latest 9/11 situation in Benghazi. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Right. He headed up the commission that covered up the CIA drug running. So absolutely, he's all over the cover-ups. He was the ringer for Bush, obviously, in 2004. So he is 100% firmly ensconced in that establishment. And that's it's very worrying. Also, he's a big pusher of climate change as the biggest possible threat to U.S. security going into the future. So I think we're going to see a huge push on the climate change issue in the second term of Obama.
All right, James, we'll move to our third and final story this week as it centers in even more here in the United States, and we go into New York. But on a positive note, we've mentioned, James, here, we try and close, if we can, with a positive story. Police stop and frisk program in the Bronx is ruled unconstitutional. An element of the New York Police Department's stop and frisk practice was deemed unconstitutional by a federal judge on Tuesday, again, January 8th, 2013, a ruling that may have broad implications for the city's widespread use of police stops as a crime-fighting tactic. The decision, the first federal ruling to find that the practice under the Bloomberg regime violates the Fourth Amendment protection against unreasonable search and seizure. Focused on police stops conducted in front of several thousand private residential buildings in the Bronx enrolled in the Trespass Affidavit Program, TAP. Property managers in that program have asked the police to patrol their buildings and to arrest trespassers. But the judge, Shira A. Shendlin of the Federal District Court in Manhattan, said officers were routinely stopping people outside the buildings without reasonable suspicion that they were trespassing. Quote, "While it may be difficult to say where precisely to draw the line between constitutional and unconstitutional police encounters, such a line exists, and the NYPD has systematically crossed it when making trespass stops outside TAP buildings in the Bronx," end quote, Judge Shindlin ruled. I can include a couple of supplemental links to just read from the New York City's ACLU branch about the stop and frisk program. And Wikipedia also has an entry on the New York City stop and frisk program, which has not been updated since November. So it doesn't even reflect this latest development, James.
Well, again, this story just goes to show that that they can pass whatever laws they want, but it doesn't mean that they have any force or effect. So the court did the right thing for once in ruling that this was unconstitutional. But the point is that, again, all of the times that the police were using this tactic, they were using it illegally and unconstitutionally, and everyone who stood up against that was perfectly and totally within their rights. And that's what people have to keep in mind. Obviously, in the heat of the moment, when the guy with the gun and the taser is telling you what to do, it's difficult sometimes to stand up for your rights, and sometimes you have to defuse the situation. But it's important to know that you are in your rights. You do have a Fourth Amendment, whether or not the court decides to uphold it. And people have to understand that this is something that goes much deeper than whatever laws they're going to attempt to pass. And people have to stand up and say no to these unconstitutional searches and stand up for their rights, which go completely beyond this legislative shenanigans that they've been pulling. So once again, I guess the court made the right decision in this case, and it means that every single person who was stopped under this program without reasonable suspicion was having their rights violated, and people have to keep that in mind next time you get stopped in whatever program the police in your locality are attempting to do. And I guess my hat's off to the court for finally making the right decision, but too little too late, perhaps, on this issue.
See, and I can't even imagine what that must be like. I'm a West Virginia white kid who lives in white Portland. This is in the Bronx, so you know exactly what was going on here. This is pretty much racial profiling and harassment.
Absolutely so. And so, we all have to stick up for our rights. That's all I can say.
James, can I throw in one more sort of positive note here at the end as an unrelated kind of note? I heard yesterday on the mainstream news, and it made me kind of do a double take. They mentioned Bradley Manning on the news. WikiLeaker Bradley Manning awarded 112-day prison credit for military's abuses. So I suppose we could sort of file that as a positive note.
Interesting. I hadn't heard about that, so I'll check into that. All right. Well, James, anything going on your side?
I've been trying to do more interviews lately. I was on Deadline Live with Jack Blood. I did the 42 Minutes podcast with the Sync Book guys, and I'm going to be on Lifting the Veil pretty soon. And I even sat in last night for a couple hours on Ground Zero as we discussed, of course, the implications of Jones' antics on CNN the other night. But we've also been talking about all the strange weather anomalies going on and so many other things.
All right, excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to the Lifting the Veil interview. All right, James, thanks again for all the stories this week. Looking forward to it again next week.
Thanks so much. Take care.